Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Wealthability Show with Tom Wheelwright. Way more money, way less taxes.
Welcome to the Wealthability Show, where we're always discovering how to make way more money and pay way less taxes. Hi, this is Tom Wheelwright, your host, founder, and CEO of Wealthability. So what if the IRS could make you prove that every dollar that went into your bank account wasn't taxable? In other words, what if the banks actually had to report as if every dollar that comes into your bank account is income, whether it's from a home refinancing, whether it's from a loan, whether it's from a transfer from another bank account? What if that were to happen? Well, that's actually in discussion right now at the U.S. Congress as part of this whole budget reconciliation bill. And I am very privileged. We are very privileged to have two very, very important guests, Jim Amundson, head of the Community Bank Association in Minnesota, and Patrick Hedger, who's vice president of the Taxpayer Protection Alliance. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves. Why don't you go ahead, Jim, and introduce yourself, and then we'll pass it over to Patrick.
Thanks, Tom. As you said, I'm Jim Amundson, and I lead the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota. We're a trade association that represents community banks in our state, and we're very actively working this issue. But we have Minnesota, I think, is the third largest number of charters in the country behind Illinois and Texas. And so we're a state that's well established with community banks, and every single one of them is concerned about this proposal.
Awesome. Thank you. And Patrick.
Hi, I'm Patrick Hedger, Vice President of Policy at the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit taxpayer and consumer watchdog based in Washington, D.C. And this stuff is right in our wheelhouse. I mean, talk about a taxpayer issue, talk about government accountability, the idea of the IRS snooping on payments and account transactions as low as $600 is what this proposal is. Just egregious, and happy to be here to be able to talk about it.
So Patrick, let's start with you. Would you just kind of walk us through what this proposal is? Now, here's what everybody needs to understand. This is not a casual proposal. The Democrats have already started talking about this as a way to raise the revenue to give back the state and local tax deduction to the high income taxpayers in California, New Jersey, New York, et cetera. So this is an active conversation at the House. It wasn't talked about during the House Ways and Means markup, but it looks like it's going to be talked about in the final markup before the House votes on it. So, Patrick, if you could just kind of walk through what you see that this proposal really is supposed to do.
Yeah, so there's a lot of talk in Washington about the so-called tax gap, right? That there's a lot of, you know, we have what the CBO projects tax rate should be able to bring in, and then there's what actually comes in the door, and then the difference is the tax gap, which assumes that there's a certain amount of tax avoidance out there, and obviously that's the case, right? Obviously, there, you know, not every taxable dollar out there is taxed, but a lot of that is for completely benign reasons, and a lot of that is just because folks aren't aware of it. I mean, it's the average Joe and Jane out there that doesn't realize that that income or that transaction is taxable. And usually we look the other way because that, I mean, talk about a drop in the bucket. I mean, the average person not paying tax on a couple hundred dollars on a certain transaction that may be taxable is really not going to cover any sort of, certainly not going to cover the deficits we're running right now, which are measured in the trillions of dollars. So this is, I mean, to say that they're going after low hanging fruit here, I mean, it's not even the case. I mean, they're like trying to pick up rotten fruit off the ground. It doesn't make sense. I mean, the majority of taxes in this country, forget what AOC's dress says. I mean, the rich and powerful, they're the ones that are paying the vast majority of taxes. Last year, we had 60% of Americans almost paid no income tax or owed no income tax. So this is just really grasping at straws, and it's Democrats looking for any way to justify a spending blowout.
All right. So basically, as I understand the proposal, Patrick, is that banks, and we'll get to Jim next because he represents the banks here, banks would have to report all of the deposits coming into every bank account. Any bank account that's over $600 gets over $600 of deposits. Is have I got that right, basically, Jim?
Yes, all the inflows and outflows. So it's you know, a full accounting of on any account in excess of $600. I mean, there's, you know, what's the methodology behind the $600? You know, as Patrick was saying, it's a drop in the bucket, and there's really been no cost benefit analysis done on what it's going to take to make this happen. And the estimates of, you know, $500 billion of additional tax revenue over 10 years is, I think, a reach, and nobody's been able to produce, you know, how that was calculated.
Well, let me give you a nightmare scenario if I can. And Patrick, I'd like you to respond to this. Here's my nightmare scenario. You get a 1099 from one of Jim's members. And that 1099 has everything that's come in and shows everything that's come in and everything that's gone out. Then what the IRS does is they actually have you fill out a form that says, why isn't your income equal to this total income that's being reported, which is the whole purpose of 1099s in the first place, right? Is to make sure that businesses especially are reporting 100% of their income. And, you know, so they want to make sure that the income reported is actually more than the 1099s that are reported, right? That's generally the rule. And frankly, as accountants, that's what we look at. We look at the 1099s of our clients, and we compare that to the income. And as long as the income's higher, we're good to go, pretty much. So I could see even a new form, and we now have an M1, an M2, an M3. I can see an M4, which is actually where you have to justify anything that is not income, which, you know, in my business, that is the Accounts Full Employment Act right there.
Yes.
For the taxpayer, to me, that seems like a nightmare. Patrick, can you rate, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be where we're heading. I mean, and there's also been a talk about automatic withholding on all transactions that are $600 or above. And it's not just bank transactions as well. We're talking about financial service apps like Venmo, PayPal. You know, so if you're get a group of friends and you cover the cost for a cabin weekend on Airbnb and they all pay you back, those transactions could be subject to withholding until you prove that that's not income and that's money that you've already put out yourself. I mean, it is a nightmare scenario. And what this is really designed to do is give the IRS an excuse to audit as many people as possible. And you're not going to bring money in the door from the transactions themselves, the taxes on the transactions, but you're going to bring in the money through fining people after they've gone through audits and they've put their hands up to say, I don't have the CPAs or the lawyers to be able to deal with this.
So Jim, what's the bank's take on this? What's there? You mentioned before we got started that every one of your members is concerned about this. Why? I mean, it seems to me simple reporting.
People might think that, but it's far from simple. And it's really, you know, to get it in the format that the IRS or Treasury or whoever would collect it would require. Every one of these banks has a core operating system. And, you know, this would be an additional requirement that they would have to, you know, pay their core operating system or their core provider. You know, those companies don't do anything out of the goodness of their heart. And so to be able to get this information put together, it becomes a reporting burden, you know, at a time when, I mean, community banks especially did about 65% of the Paycheck Protection Program loans over the last 18 months and, you know, served as a real backbone to that program. And, you know, to have them start throwing on additional reporting and compliance requirements right now, to me is it's one of the main issues we have with it is the burden it would create and the costs that it would create for these small banks that are already overburdened by Dodd-Frank and other heavy bank regulations.
Interesting. So are you at all concerned, Jim, about your clients? Because your clients are all entrepreneurs, right? I mean, they're listening to this program mm-hmm. right now. Community Bank serves primarily the business community, right?
Yes.
So yep. are you concerned about them and what impact the compliance will be on them?
Absolutely. And the threat to their privacy, you know, the IRS has had data breaches. I've heard estimates that they have 1.4 billion cyber attacks a year. And so how is this information going to be, you know, safe? How are they going to be able to protect it? You know, do they have the enough manpower or resources to, you know, process this massive, I mean, it would be massive amounts of data that would just be, you know, they don't have the people they need to do what they do today. Where are they going to get these people and the resources? And, you know, to me, it's but they're very concerned about it from a privacy standpoint, from a government overreach standpoint, and, you know, safety and security. And we really, as an organization, believe it's going to contribute to additional people being unbanked or underbanked, which is something that, you know, the people pushing this proposal claim to care about. And, you know, in certain sectors or certain demographics, the mistrust or the lack of belief that their information is going to be safe or secure could certainly lead people to leave the system. And you know, frankly, at this point, how many big time tax cheats are actually using the financial services system right now? I mean, you know, and right. if they're dumb enough to be doing it, they're going to be gone as soon as this passes. You know,
when your yard maintenance person or your contractor asks for cash, they're not asking for cash because it makes it easier for them to spend it. Right. They're asking for cash because they're not reporting it as income for sure.
Right.
And there's a lot of that cash transaction. So let me ask you this, Patrick, do you think that this will drive people? Would this actually drive cryptocurrency? Because cryptocurrency, while it would have some of the reporting, there's no way that they can require this kind of reporting from the crypto because they don't have they're not even close to having the capacity to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to do a couple of things. It's going to drive people to alternative channels, certainly to the extent that they can get around reporting a cryptocurrency, though people will head there. You're also going to get a lot of $599.99 transactions. the main thing is with all, I can't even say this is really a well-intended policy, but most policies like this end up just sweeping up people trying to do the right thing, creating paperwork burdens on folks that otherwise are pretty honest about their taxes. And again, as I said earlier, maybe are unaware that a certain transaction is considered a taxable event, and really avoiding the core problem here, which is it's not really even tax avoidance. The core problem here is that Washington has a spending problem. Like I'm so tired of hearing that we need to be monitoring transactions as low as $600 when Washington pretends that deficits don't matter. I mean, these things are completely, I mean, this is entirely about surveillance, and I share the privacy concerns here, and which is why I take some solace in the fact that this proposal might run into Fourth Amendment issues, because this is an IRS is fundamentally a law enforcement agency. And if they're issuing essentially what seems like a blanket warrant here to go after folks, look for wrongdoing, I think there's going to be a huge Fourth Amendment issue here. And hopefully that gets brought up.
Let's talk about that, whether this will be an audit issue. Of course, they're supposedly getting $80 billion in this. And so that's supposedly for technology and audits. By the way, it's interesting to me that $80 billion says nothing about customer service, which we know is horrendous at the IRS. So let me paint a scenario, Patrick. You tell me if you think this is possible, all right? So right now, you get a 1099 and it doesn't show up on your tax return. What happens is you get an automatic notice from the IRS and they tell you how much tax you owe, right? That's typical 1099, whether it's from interest or dividends, you just forgot, whatever. Everybody's okay with that. Now, in this case, you're getting a 1099 from one of Jim's banks. And the bank says, well, you had $2 million. Okay, let's say you make $200,000 a year, but you had $2 million of money that came in because, of course, you don't have one bank account. You have multiple bank accounts, right? Because every business has multiple bank accounts for a whole variety of reasons. And so, and most businesses have more than one, most business owners have more than one business for that matter, right? Mm-hmm. So they're transferring money back and forth all the time and they're keeping track of it. But you get this $2 million and the IRS says, okay, we're going to send you a bill for taxable income of $2 million, you prove that's not right. Is that a possibility here?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, we don't have the final details. And that's another problem with this process is that the Congress essentially these days, and this is across the board in terms of legislation, Congress says they basically put out generic platitudes and then they leave up all the details to administrative agencies. So it's really the IRS that's going to be setting the rules of the road, not Congress. Congress is just going to give them the broad framework to say, we're going to be monitoring transactions like this. So yeah, that's certainly a possibility. It's guilty until proven innocent, which is fundamentally un-American as well. And to a point that was made earlier about privacy, the IRS just recently leaked a bunch of information about the wealthiest individuals in this country to ProPublica. And no wrongdoing was found in that. All it was found is that, wow, it turns out the wealthiest people in this country have really good accountants. and that was the big scoop. And so how can we trust the IRS here with information, you know, again, as granular as a $600 transaction, you could be tracking people's airline tickets at a price like that. It's a massive invasion of privacy.
Well, on top of that, let's look at what the IRS isn't doing right now. So it was reported that in 2019 was the year, there were 250,000 S corporations, these are small business pass-through corporations, that had over $100,000 of net income but reported no salaries, which we know is an easy, you know, that's under compliance, right? Because you have to pay a reasonable salary. All accounts know that. We make sure our clients know that. And yet you had 250,000 that the IRS didn't go after. So the question is, why is this happening? In other words, is it just a way to justify more funds to the IRS? Is it a way to justify the $600 billion spend that's going to come out of this? What is behind this? Because it can't possibly be that the IRS doesn't have enough to do.
Yeah, I think it's probably more of a national security surveillance push, being under the guise of trying to generate revenue and trying to close the tax gap. But because otherwise it doesn't make sense, because again, this is really low and it's not even low hanging fruit. This is not the core of the problem. This is not the core of the federal government's budget problem. And as you said, like there's plenty that the IRS could already be going after without changes to tax law like this. So I really think it's some sort of national security excuse. They're looking for drug or crime excuse. They're looking for drug transactions, things like that.
Jim, do you think, you see a lot of this with your banks. I mean, you're tied in there. Do you think that is a big problem right now that there's, I mean, we in January, we got the bill, right, that makes all LLCs, for example, limited liability companies have to report their owners, right? That already passed. So yeah. Do you see this as that's what you're seeing? Do you think that there is that big of a problem?
Well, I have no way of gauging what is, you know, the tax gap or what is potentially being left on the table. You know, as I've been in this role for 5 years, but 25 years previous to that, I was in community banks, leading community banks and working with our clients. You know, and again, I are there people who maybe get into gray areas and do some things that maybe aren't fully compliant? I'll certainly give you that, but I didn't have any.
Do you think that there's a lot of criminal activity going through the
no, bank? No, I mean, they're just not. No, it's not. We already have, you know, I feel like we're to a certain extent uncompensated agents of the government already. We have to fill out currency transaction reports on anything over $10,000. We have to file suspicious activity reports. If we do see somebody coming in with, you know, unusual amounts of cash or doing things, you know, wiring money to various, you know, whatever they're doing, you know, banks are obligated and expected to file suspicious activity reports or SARs on that. And those seem like they go into a black hole and, you know, the banks never hear anything back on any of that. And so I feel like we're already giving, you know, we submit the 1099s on all the accounts that have earned a certain level of interest. We, you know, we do these SARs, the CTRs, all that stuff. And, you know, start doing more and using the tools that you have available to you already and see what happens before we start laying this, you know, what I look at like, a communist type burden on taxpayers and on the financial institutions. And it's not just banks, it's credit unions, it's brokerage houses, it's across the board. And I should clarify, I think I could be wrong and it doesn't really change the discussion, but I think it's all inflows and outflows on accounts over $600. Even if it's a small transaction, you're reporting it.
Hey, if you like financial education the way I do, you're going to love Buck Joffrey's podcast. Buck's a friend of mine. He's a client of mine. He's a former board certified surgeon, and he's turned into a real estate professional. So he has this podcast that is geared towards high paid professionals. That's who he's geared towards. So if you're a high paid professional, you're going, look, I'd like to do something different with my money than what I'm doing. I'd like to get financially educated. I'd like to take control of my money and my life and my taxes. I would love to recommend Buck Joffrey's podcast, which is called Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. I hope you join Buck on this adventure of a lifetime.
So Patrick, let's say that now in New York, we know that New York is doing a much better job of tracking taxable activity than the US, the federal government. They have much better systems. For example, they will look at a convenience store and they'll go, how many lottery tickets did you sell? And they're going, well, then your income should be X. And they actually have statistics to do that. Is it possible that that's all they'll do with this? I mean, I think it's scary to see what the possibilities, we've talked about the possibilities, what they could do with it, but do you think they might use this just for data and then pull people for audit? Or do you think they will make it an automatic audit?
I think it'll be, I mean, I don't think the IRS has the resources to do the automatic auditing, but I think it'll, yeah, they're going to paint pictures of where they're seeing probably on a geographic basis and also an industry basis of where they're seeing people skirting the rules or whether they know it or not. Because we kind of already see this in IRS audit enforcement, right? I mean, they disproportionately target indigent communities. I mean, the Mississippi River Delta has something like a 40% really? Higher audit rate than the rest of the country. I think it's something like
Is that for earned income credit? Is that where that's coming from?
I'm not exactly sure. I just remember seeing the data that, you know, out of 1,000 tax returns, about 8 are audited nationwide, and the Mississippi River Delta, it's something like 11 to 12, somewhere in there. So, I mean, that's significantly higher. And I think that's just because the IRS knows that these are folks that don't have the hope of hiring a high powered CPA or attorney to go to bat for them. I mean, why would you go after the Jeff Bezoses of the world when you can, you know, you can nickel and dime folks in the South and up your statistics in terms of tax enforcement and get those settlements. I mean, it's just the perverse incentives of government enforcement there that are driving things like this. And I think that's what's really at the core here as well.
Because we already have bank account audits, right? We already have audits where they will come in and they will make you justify all of your, they'll look at your bank account and we have to justify. I've been through those audits for clients before, and they'll pull every single bank account for 12 months and they'll say, okay, what's this? What's this? What's this? I actually had an IRS auditor say, well, and we said, well, this is a loan came in. Here's the loan document. It said, well, loans are taxable. Well, so under what theory are loans taxable? The three of us know they're not. Okay. Sure. But this IRS auditor didn't know that, which is a little scary in and of itself. You said, Patrick, that go back to national security. You think this is a national security thing. You think this is so that they can just look into, will they be able to look into the details of the bank account, or will they just get this gross reporting?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's ultimately left to be fleshed out. I mean, I think that's something that would get fleshed out in terms of the administrative law process. You know, Congress is going to say, you know, Congress is going to grant the broad-based umbrella authority to look at, you know, transactions of a certain size if that gets passed. Hopefully it won't, but and then the IRS, you're going to see a notice and comment rulemaking where the IRS is going to flesh out the details of what they want access to, and it'll go from there. And why wouldn't they push for as much access as possible? But yeah, I mean, I think there's a national security is certainly one aspect or justification that they're going to use. But you know, it's with more information that they have, the more things that they can enforce, whether it is, you know, hitting their audit audit numbers or hitting their, having that national security access. I mean, it's sort of an all the above thing, and they're trying to get as much granular detail as possible, and then go from there and decide what they're going to do with it.
So, Jim, let me ask you one last question.
Sure.
What can the government see now? Because under Obamacare, we had, they got some access to make accounts. What is it that the government has access to already?
Well, they don't have any direct access to accounts or account information. If you're referring to health savings accounts, for example, that information is reported on, the money that has gone into the health savings account, the money that has gone out. And, if you're not using it on eligible medical expenses, then there is, there's a tax implication there. The 1099s on accounts that have earned interest or made income, those go out. And then, of course, as you said, if they suspect, wrongdoing, they have the authority to audit today. That, why not, why do you have to expand that power to this level? We don't understand that.
And then you have the requirements on the $10,000, when they put big amounts of cash in the bank, right?
Yes. And if they, if we see them structuring a transaction, most people are aware of the Bank Secrecy Act and currency transaction reporting. If we see them coming in and they're doing $3,000 one day and then maybe go to another branch, do $3,000 and then do, $4,000 the next day, we either have to report that as suspicious or, consolidate it and complete a currency transaction report. And so they're getting that information. And, this overreach, it would be so much information. I can't possibly believe that they'd be able to process it and do anything valuable with it, and it would expose everybody's.
So you business. See it. You see it as a huge way to expose a lot of private information and no real benefit.
Right, and I think, what are the motives? I have no idea, but frankly, it feels like the way the administration is referring to this and talking about it is that they would be fine if there were just a few big banks left in the country and big companies, and that there's the concept of entrepreneurs and people building a dream and doing things that, have really been the backbone of this company or country from the beginning. They don't value those things. And so to me, it's an effort to make those things go away.
So very much another attack on small business, which we've been seeing since the pandemic hit. We've seen a massive attack on small business. So exactly. Patrick, final words on any recommendations that you have for taxpayers, right this minute as this is being discussed?
Yeah, well, some final thoughts on it to kind of piggyback off something Jim said. I mean, this is an administration and this is a Congress that is claiming to care about competition and claiming that, the economy is too concentrated in so many sectors. And this just flies in the face of that. I mean, it really calls into question everything that Washington's trying to do in terms of competition law and this renewed focus on antitrust, when you have a regulatory system now that's going to be driving community banks out of business. And so you can't keep complaining about concentration in the financial sector when you're doing all of these things, when you're drowning community banks, the backbones of most communities, into the ground with red tape. What I would encourage taxpayers to do is, at this point, we're still in the process of formulating what this reconciliation bill and the payments for it are going to look like. So call your members of Congress and call the Senate, flood the switchboards and say, this is a non-starter. This is totally ridiculous. It's a major invasion of privacy. And I think something Jim said as well is really important. This is going to continue to drive a crisis in underbanked folks, right? It's going to drive a lot of folks that are doing a lot of banking through applications on their smartphones. It's going to reduce their access to financial services as well. So there's just really no win here except for the surveillance state, and it's unacceptable.
Interesting. So Jim, any final comments from you?
Yeah, I echo those encouraging anybody who sees this or listens to it and to, tell 10 friends. I mean, we have a massive campaign underway nationwide. I think at this point, 270,000 messages have been sent to members of Congress, and we're not only doing bank advocacy, but our bankers are turning to their customers, the small businesses, the consumers that bank with these banks and saying, hey, listen, this is real. This could happen. We would have no choice if it passes to share this information directly with the IRS. And we're already hearing people that are closing accounts, pulling money out, even before the bill has been finalized. And I would just say that we have no idea. I mean, there's a section 1071 in Dodd-Frank that was passed, you know, a long time ago, and the rules are just being written on that today, you know, almost a decade or more later. And it's an onerous small business reporting requirement that is just, and that's not going to get much publicity because it's in the rulemaking now. The law's already been passed and signed. So, you know, I people have to step up and make a call to their member of the House and their two senators and tell others to do the same thing. You know, the volume's going to matter. The numbers are going to count on this one.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So Patrick Hedger, Jim Amundson, so great to have you with us. Thank you for sharing your views of this. This is a public education issue at this point because so few people know that this is even being considered. I found it interesting that they decided not to discuss it in Ways and Means, which is where they have all the discussion. That becomes very public and the Wall Street Journal reports on it and everybody reports on it. Now they're going to do this in markup, which is where you get much less reporting. So I think this is scary because I deal with the IRS all the time. And while the IRS doesn't scare me, I certainly see the amount of burden that this would place on your folks, Jim. And Patrick, I appreciate everything that you and Taxpayer Protection Alliance is doing, really to be a watchdog for taxpayers, because we certainly need a watchdog. We need a lot of watchdogs in Washington right now. So thank you so much. Patrick, if you can, how would people, you know, reach you or your group?
Yeah, sure. It's real simple. www.protectingtaxpayers.org is our website. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook, and you can keep track of what we're doing there. And you know, we're looking at that issue that Jim brought up there at the end, the small business reporting requirements at the CFPB right now are pretty concerning as well. It's another major invasion of privacy with all sorts of unintended consequences. So,
awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Patrick. And Jim, what about your group?
Well, our website is minnesota.bank, and you can get to us there and find contact information. We're certainly on social media as well. But, you know, as I said, our national association is helping our customers, the customers of our banks, to reach out to members of Congress. And we'd be happy to share some of those resources as well.
Awesome. Thank you both. Thank you everybody for listening and participating in this, because this is an education issue. And the more we get educated, at least we have a choice. The challenge right now is that a lot of people don't know about this and they can't make a choice. And education is all about giving people the freedom to choose. And the more education they get, the more freedom they have. And not only that, but the more education, especially the more financial education they get, the more money they make and the less taxes they pay. Thanks, everybody. We'll see everyone next time.
You've been listening to The Wealth Ability Show with Tom Wheelwright. Way more money, way less taxes. To learn more, go to wealthability.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.